Blog Talk Radio.
I'll do whatever I can, wherever I am, whenever you want me to. Yeah, you have a friend in me till the end. Whatever I can, I'll do for you. You have a friend in me till the end.
Well, welcome everyone to another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University, calling to you live from, where the heck am I, from Tunica, Mississippi, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern Time. And I've got my co-host with me today, Rhonda Del Baccio, the story lady herself. Welcome, Rhonda.
Hey, I'm so delighted to be here, as always, and really excited about our show. And you're always traveling to such interesting places, my goodness.
I had to think for a minute trying to remember where the heck I was.
Yeah.
I've had a few too many places in the last week or two, I think.
Yep.
Well, we've got another great show scheduled for today, and it's one that I've been really interested in looking forward to. So, Rhonda, why don't you do the honors of telling our listeners who our guest is today?
Well, we have a great and fantastic guest. And it's really funny how one thing leads to another in what we do. And I have known about Laurel Clark, our guest, and the School of Metaphysics for years and years and years and years and years. So I'm really, really excited to meet you. What was funny, the way that it connected us, is that I had sent out a call through Haro, Help a Reporter, out for quotes for the book that I'm working on, sent VIP, for how writing a book has changed your business and improved your business. And Laura was one of the people who reached out and shared her story, which we'll get into in a little bit later, one of the things that she shared. But she has the School of Metaphysics, which teaches all kinds of wonderful ways to connect with that power beyond ourselves. And her book is about the universal law of attraction. She also, Gina, and I imagine that you've had a chance to look at the website, but she is definitely a big player in the peace movement, and there is a Peace Dome link on www.som, as in schoolofmetaphysics.org, som.org. There's a Peace Dome and wonderful activities around bringing peace to the world, as well as bringing understanding between people and deep connections. So, Laurel Clark, we are excited and thrilled to have you as our guest on the show today.
I'm delighted to be here.
Well, hi, Laurel. I've been looking forward to meeting you as well.
Well, great.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. I am currently the president of the School of Metaphysics. The school is a not-for-profit educational institution. It is headquartered in Missouri, and actually, by synchronicity, it's not far from where Rhonda lives. We're in a place called Windyville, Missouri. We're building a college campus there. And then there are 15 branch centers that are in Midwestern cities, and then we also do quite a bit of online education. What the school teaches is how to become what we call a whole functioning self, how to bring forth the potential of the self through the development of mental exercises, things like concentration exercises, learning how to meditate, how to develop skills in listening, how to visualize, how to develop intuition, how to interpret dreams. It's quite comprehensive. And one of the things that I really love about the course of study, I've been doing this for 30 years now, is that I think everybody is aware that there's more to them than meets the eye. They think of it in different ways. You know, it might be that they have dreams and ideas that they've thought about, but they're hesitant to act on it.
Mm-hmm.
It might be that they have talents and abilities that they've always been interested in, but they've never really pursued. It might be that they, you know, we have a lot of students who are what I would call Renaissance man type people. They have interest in all different areas of life, and they don't want to specialize in just one because that would cut them out of all of the other things. And so sometimes they don't really do anything because they don't know where to start. So
yeah,
we teach people how to bring out the potential and really develop it. And, I mean, there are many wonderful stories about people who have accomplished the things that they always dreamed about, people who have used what they've learned for healing, physical healing, emotional healing, people who
mm-hmm.
have learned to go beyond just fulfilling their own desires. I mean, that's part of what people learn, to really
yeah.
do things that aid other people in humanitarian ways. And so I do all kinds of things. I'm a teacher primarily. I'm also an interfaith minister, counselor. We do intuitive reports, which some people would call readings, like past life intuitive reports, intuitive health reports. And so I'm an intuitive reporter, and we do those for people all over the world. I do public speaking. I'm an author. Those are some of the things that I do.
Well, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to sum her up in a couple of, sentences.
She's certainly not bored.
Right?
No.
And I can appreciate what you're saying, Gina. I also travel a lot, and so sometimes I'll be driving and see a street name, and all of a sudden I can't remember what city I'm in because I've seen that street in a lot of different cities that I've traveled to.
Oh, my husband and I live in our RV full time.
Oh, I see.
So we truly are traveling 365 days of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And last week, it was the first time I actually flew anywhere since February of 2000, if you can believe that.
Wow.
And
wow.
I've just been all out of sorts ever since.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So let's talk a little bit more about the School of Metaphysics and what it does and how it can help folks.
Well, the school is not-for-profit, as I said. It's entirely funded on donations. The course of study is primarily for adults, although we do have some books and other programs. We have a summer program that's for kids and their families. However, it's primarily adult education. And the regular course of study includes a step-by-step program of spiritual discipline to teach essential life skills, self-respect, undivided attention, concentration, memory, listening, imagination, reasoning, intuition, breath, and entrainment are the 10 skills that we teach. We teach people how to meditate in a step-by-step manner. For example, we teach concentration before we teach meditation because sometimes people try to meditate. What happens is they, first of all, have a challenge even sitting still, and then if they can sit still, their mind wanders all over the place. So we teach concentration first.
Mm-hmm.
Teach people how to hold their attention still so then they can practice the inner listening that is what I understand as meditation. So we have the comprehensive course of study for people who are in one of the cities that we have School of Metaphysics branches. We also do quite a bit of work with dreams, and we have this past year developed an online dream study program for people who want to receive certification to become what we call a dreamologist, which is very helpful for people, counselors, for example, who want to incorporate dreams in their counseling practice, people who perhaps just want to be full-time dream counselors. I mean, many people take the course for their own personal study, but it is designed to teach people how they can use it to aid other people. So that's what the coursework involves, and it's very much based on practical application. It's not just reading books and talking about ideas. It's reading the ideas and then learning how to apply them through practical application.
Gotcha. Now,
one of the things, go ahead, Linda. One of the things I found that was just very interesting in reading the website at www.som.org, which you have a testimonial from somebody. And see, I've always have felt that developing your, well, concentration, meditation, your inner abilities, your skills in different areas can touch and improve any arena of life. You testimonial from somebody who is an English as a second language teacher. So this isn't just for people that might want to be counselors or who are into metaphysics in specific or whatever, but it does have these real-world applications in different arenas. This person who is an English, an ESL, English as a second language teacher, says that they felt a newfound ability to reach out and touch their students in the ESL classes and to teach them more effectively. So it just shows you that enhancing these skills, it doesn't seem like it would matter what particular arena you're in, not only counseling and that kind of thing, you know, certainly coaching, but for any entrepreneur and in pretty much any niche, I can see an application for it. What would you say, Atler?
That is absolutely true. We have people of all ages, all backgrounds, who have used this study in all different kinds of ways in their lives. And one student who comes to mind is a dentist and a very brilliant man who was on ADD medication when he first became a student. And he's one of the Renaissance type people that I was talking about. He's also an inventor. And part of what he didn't like about the ADD medication is that it kind of stifled his creative drive. I mean, he could focus, but his imagination was kind of stifled. So from doing concentration exercises every day, what he learned was how to be able to focus on one idea at a time, not to squelch his ideas, but to have some proper perspective about what to focus on when. And so as a result of that, not only has his dental practice improved, he also has actually manifested several of these inventions, and some of them apparently are going to earn quite a bit of money. So, I mean, it's helped him in his creative life, his personal life, his financial life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just one example of many different ways that people apply the study.
Seems to be a great way to overcome what in our realm we might call, or I like to call, the entrepreneur's disease, the people who are a starter of many things and a finisher of none.
Yes, absolutely. As well as the flip side of that, which is people who procrastinate, who don't start to think that they need to.
Now, I know you talk a lot about visualization. How does visualization come into play with all of this?
Well, visualization is an art and a science. It is more than just imagining what you want. It includes imagining what you want and developing the willpower, meaning making the choices to move you in the direction of what you want. And what there's been a lot of publicity out recently about the truth that your thoughts are things and that you attract to you what you think about, which is very true. However, what many people don't understand is that thoughts occur in picture form. So it's not just what you say. It is what you are actually imaging. And so part of visualization is, first of all, being aware of the images that you hold in your mind, and then being aware of how to create the kind of images that are going to produce what you want, and then being aware of how to pay attention to the ways that your subconscious mind is either drawing to you or leading you to be drawn to what will fulfill the desire. And one example is how this radio show got set up, that a student at one of our school of metaphysics branches told me about this Help a Reporter Out service, which I was curious about, so I subscribed to it, and three times a day I kind of scanned through the entries, and I decided to respond to this one. And actually, when Rhonda, you were saying one thing leads to another, that is another universal law called the law of relativity, which it's a very important law to align with, because sometimes when people are too narrow-minded, they may not respond to things that don't seem exactly like what they were looking for. The thing about the subconscious mind drawing to us or drawing us to the things that will help us fulfill our desires is that the subconscious mind has a much broader perspective than the conscious mind does. So in our conscious mind, we might not always know exactly how we're going to produce the things we want to. So that's why it's important to pay attention to the signs that something is happening or to respond to something that might lead us in the direction we want to. And, I mean, I never knew about this radio show. I did know about the query that I was responding to, and then in responding to that, at the bottom of Rhonda's email, there's a little logo that says, a million clicks for peace, and so I let her know about the peace work that we do. So that type of synchronicity is part of the art of how visualization works. And we do teach people the science, which is that there are universal laws that operate for anyone, anytime, any place. Whether you believe in them or not, they still operate, just like the law of gravity operates, whether you believe in it or not. So we teach people about what those laws are, what the mechanics are of what happens in the mind, so that anyone can more efficiently and accurately align with it.
That's great.
Excellent.
I know I personally have a number of students who say that visualization is something that's very challenging for them.
Mm-hmm.
They just, when they close their eyes, they don't see anything other than black.
Mm-hmm.
What can someone who's struggling to use visualization do to help overcome that?
Well, there's a few things. One of the things that I have become aware of is that particularly people who are about 30 years old or younger have grown up on so much TV, computers, movies. They've had images that have been given to them. And, I mean, when I was growing up, we had restrictions on how much TV we could watch, and I read a lot, and my parents read to me a lot. So that's one thing that people can do to strengthen their visualizing ability is either to listen to books on tape, to have somebody read to them, or to read, because when you read, there are words on a page, particularly a good author, like good novels, the authors paint very clear images with the words. So when you read them, what it calls upon you to do is to receive the image of whoever the author is. And that's one of the things that I became aware of really after I learned principles of visualization, is that's part of what aided me to strengthen that ability as a child, was just the many, many hours that I read. I was the kind of kid that even when it was nice outside, I'd be inside reading a book. The many hours that I read and the many hours that my parents read to me, and also listening to story records on tape. So those are all things that are beneficial. Doing a simple exercise like taking an object, a coffee cup maybe, gazing at it for a period of time, and then closing your eyes and in your mind reproducing the image of that coffee cup. And if it's really not clear, then you open your eyes, you look at it again, you know, really pay attention to the details, and then close your eyes until you can recall that to mind. That's a first step in being able to see images that are in the mind. And then another thing that's helpful is to practice observation, like if you're driving, to pay attention to your surroundings and then describe out loud what you're seeing. Like, say the name of the street signs out loud, describe the building that you're passing by. If someone really has a hard time doing it, it might be better to go out and take a walk and do it instead of trying to do it while driving, especially if it's busy traffic. The point being that learning how to see with your eyes open is an important step in being able to visualize them with your eyes closed.
Yeah, definitely. And what you're also talking about there, Laurel, is bringing yourself into a state of awareness of what's happening around you. And there are so many people who just, I would say, phone it in, who are not really in the here and now. Their mind is either in the past or it's in the future, and they're not wherever they are and not focusing on the present. So in other words, what you're suggesting is that one of the best ways to improve your tool, your ability to visualize and recreate images in your mind is simply to practice awareness and being in the present moment and observing what's going on around you.
Yes, that is absolutely true. And that is something that people need to develop, especially in this day and age when most people are taught the opposite. They're taught to multitask, you know, to talk on the phone while driving, to eat while watching TV, which produces not being aware of what's going on around you. So that's actually one of the first lessons we teach our students is undivided attention in the present moment.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
So describe for me how someone would get started with the whole process that you guys teach. I often have people coming to me saying, I know I keep hearing the term the law of attraction, and I know that this other stuff exists out there, but I don't know anything about it. I don't know even where to start. Mm-hmm. Even my own family is right there. And I would love to have some place that I could send them and tell them, okay, guys, this is what you got to do, but I don't know what to say.
Okay. Well, if it's someone who lives in one of the 15 cities in the Midwest where we have a school of metaphysics location, what I would recommend is to give the school a call and take a class where the person can come in person with a teacher and a group of classmates. The class meets once a week. If it's someone who lives in a place where we don't have a school, then there is a correspondence study that teaches the first 10 lessons, which offers enough basics that it can give someone a very good foundation. The challenge with that, like with any self-study program, is that it requires quite a bit of self-motivation.
Mm-hmm.
However, for people who are self-motivated, it works very well, and there is a teacher at our headquarters who they can correspond with by letter. We also have weekend retreats. We call them spiritual focus weekends that are very valuable. And, in fact, this past weekend we just had one at our campus in Missouri, and it taught people about principles of visualization, and it offers one of these intuitive reports that I was talking about. So for people, we actually design those weekend retreats for people who live in cities where we don't have school centers. So those are several different options. And the School of Metaphysics website is www.som, as in School of Metaphysics.org. From there, they can find a list of our locations. The email address is som@som.org, so that people can email with questions and we can let them know about the different options. We actually have several websites. There's dreamschool.org that has the information about the online dream study program. And then peacedome.org has the peace work we do. And then we also have one called healingwall.org. There's a healing wall that is around a peace dome we have on our campus. And for people who live in different countries particularly, we're asking people to send us native stones. Our goal is to have a stone from every country in the world embedded on a world map that a group of kids did, the idea being then that when the map is completed, it will have the consciousness of the entire world embedded in one place, because there's each of the stones has a consciousness of that country. So those are some of the ways that people can get involved in what we're doing.
That would be fantastic. I want to talk a little bit more about the peace domes for a minute.
Sure.
Tell me a little more about them.
Well, we in... It actually, where the story started was in 1993, I believe it was, there was a Parliament of the World's Religions that took place in Chicago that was a 100-year anniversary of an 1893 Parliament of the World's Religions that took place in Chicago that brought together people from all over the country of all different faiths. And a group of us from the School of Metaphysics went to the one in Chicago in 1993. And it was a wonderful experience of having, there were something like 7,000 people there, all different faith traditions, who were gathered together to bring about mutual understanding. And there was a lot of focus during that event. It lasted about 10 days, I think, on everything that was wrong with the world, the oppression, the poverty, the greed, fighting against all of these ills. And although the sentiment was very heartfelt, what we realized is that there was something wrong with that picture, that in order to bring about peace, you can't do it by fighting against what's wrong. And you certainly can't do it by blaming the oppressors, because I think we all know that as much as we try to get other people to change, you can't get someone else to change. What you can do is change yourself, and that was one of the great lessons of Mahatma Gandhi, who's the one who said you must be the change you want to see in the world. So what we did, a group of teachers at the School of Metaphysics spent about a year coming up with positive ways that bring about peace, positive ways of thinking, positive ways of acting. We did a lot of research, researching historical documents, peace treaties, our own experience, and it was a group of probably 24 teachers who discussed, debated, to come up with what we call a universal peace covenant. And in the process of doing this, we also we came up with a universal peace covenant, and then we started doing different peace endeavors, one of which is every year at New Year's, we ask people to observe a universal hour of peace, to dedicate their thoughts and actions to peace for the hour 11:30 p.m. December 31st to 12:30 a.m. January 1st. The idea being that if people think and act in peaceful ways to bring in the new year, that that creates a seed idea pattern that aids us in having peace in the world. And it's based on a principle that is very true, that thoughts are things and that everything begins with thoughts. And at midnight, we asked people around the world to read this Universal Peace Covenant, and we've had people participating from all 7 continents, even in Antarctica. So, I mean, that's just very heartwarming and amazing that so many people really do want peace. But we had that going on, and then we also, on our college campus in Missouri, part of the vision is for it to be a place that aligns with universal principles, and the actual physical structures are built with understanding how energy moves through form, with sacred geometry. So we started researching about different kinds of domes, because what we have in our country are primarily houses and buildings that are square. And the energy that moves through a square box is quite a bit different than the way energy moves through a circular type of dome. So we started building this monolithic dome on our campus. And one day a local reporter came by to do an interview about what we were doing. I mean, for rural Missouri, it's quite unusual to have a dome on a building. And he said, so what are you going to call this, a peace dome? And our chancellor heard that, and he received it, and he said, yes, that's what we're going to call it. So it was kind of like, here was this man who came out of the blue, who was like an angel, telling us that this is what the dome wanted to be called.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we were building the peace dome, we started studying the lives of people who won the Nobel Peace Prize, so that we could learn about real people in the world who had dedicated their own lives to different work that was part of bringing about peace in the world. And through that, we also developed a program, a play that's called The Invitation, that brings together 8 different Nobel Peace Laureates and has them discussing their ideas of peace with each other. And the words they say in the play are words that they actually said when they accepted the Nobel Peace Prize. So it's a very educational and inspirational program, because I personally have learned a tremendous amount about the people who won the Nobel Peace Prize. Some of them I had never heard about, including the person I portray, who her name is Shireen Ebadi. She's still alive, and she is a civil rights lawyer in Iran. She was the first female judge in Iran, and then was removed from her position when the revolution came around. It has Martin Luther King Jr., it has Mother Teresa, it has Linus Pauling, a number of different people, His Holiness the Dalai Lama. So that's one of the programs that we offer in the Peace Dome. We also have meditations that occur there. Surrounding the Peace Dome is where that healing wall is that I was referring to. So it's a site that is a universal site dedicated to peace.
After today's show, I am definitely going to go check it out even further, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with the Peace Dome, are you aware of a guy by the name of Hugh Simpson who has an organization called Seventh Haven?
No, I have never heard of him.
If you go to the number 7thaven.org, so it sounds like there should be two H's, but there's only one. The number 7thaven.org, seventhhaven.org.
Okay.
He's created a geodesic dome that looks much like your Peace Dome.
Mm-hmm.
That is made out of a substance called grancrete. And grancrete is simply a recycled concrete product. So they're taking roads and other things that were made of concrete that would otherwise need to be disposed of in our landfills and recycling them to use them to build these geodesic domes.
Oh.
The way that the domes are constructed, it's made out of an extremely lightweight material that's then coated with grancrete, and it makes it super easy to build these domes. Two men can build one geodesic dome in under 48 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
The price of one of these geodesic domes, the way that they're set up, with plumbing, with electric, with everything it needs to be self-sustaining, is under $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
The mission of Seventh Haven is to bring these geodesic domes into countries where there's extreme amounts of poverty, where people are really starving to death, where they don't have any homes, and to set up these geodesic domes so that it can really be a survival mechanism for families.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really, really cool. I know Hugh would love to hear about your Peace Dome for the School of Metaphysics. And I'm sure he could definitely tell you more about how he's doing with Seventh Haven and what he's doing, because he's always looking for people to be involved in that project.
That's great. I appreciate hearing about that. I'll definitely contact him.
When I saw the Peace Dome, he has been very instrumental in an organization that I'm a co-founder of called 10 Million Clicks for Peace.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw the Peace Dome, I went, wow, I bet she knows Hugh. So you don't, it's not like you see a lot of geodesic domes out there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No, really.
Yeah, the one that
especially
we have, it's actually a monolithic dome, which is also a very unusual kind of construction. It's made with, monolithic meaning one wall.
Uh-huh.
There's an airform, there's a place in Italy, Texas, that makes these airforms that is inflated. So it's kind of like a giant balloon that gets inflated, and then it's sprayed on the inside with what's called shotcrete, and I sounds like a different kind of substance, but it's a kind of concrete, so that it's actually one piece. It seems to me kind of like paper mache. You know, you inflate a balloon and then put the paper mache
right,
all one piece, and then you cut out the windows and the doors so that it's very stable. It's very impervious to high winds, tornadoes. It's very energy efficient because it doesn't have a whole lot of seams like where walls come together. So it's, and it's fun to watch it happening. I mean, to watch this big form being inflated, and then until the concrete is put on, it's kept inflated by something that looks like a giant hair dryer. So it's pretty
amazing.
That's cool. That's very neat.
Yeah.
That is really cool. Now, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about metaphysics and what it really is, because there are a ton of misconceptions out there about the topic.
Yes, that is a very good question. The word metaphysics means the meta part is above or beyond, physics meaning the laws of the physical world. So metaphysics is learning about what is above or beyond the physical world, in other words, the laws of the mind or the laws of creation. So the universal law of attraction is one of these universal laws that became really popular when that movie The Secret came out. However, that's only one of 13 laws. And as I was saying earlier, the law of relativity, which is that one thing leads to another, that's another universal law. The law of cause and effect, which is that thought is cause and effect is its manifest likeness. That's another universal law. The metaphysics is the study of the universal laws, and in the School of Metaphysics, we teach the practical application of those. In other words, not just talking about them, but learning what they are, how they function, how to align with them. And it's one of the reasons why the practice of the mental exercises is so important, because it's one thing to say your thoughts create your reality. It's another thing to know, first of all, how to even be aware of your thoughts. And then it's still another thing to be able to discipline your mind so that you remove your attention from thoughts that are negative or not productive and learn how to create the kinds of thoughts that are what you want, that will be productive. How to actually create a belief that's going to work for you instead of just kind of being the victim of beliefs that aren't working. And so that's where the practice of the mental discipline is so important.
So how do you do that?
Well, for example, like some of the things I was describing with practicing observation to strengthen visualization skills, or to practice concentration, choosing a particular object to focus on and then doing that for even 10 minutes a day. And it can be anything. It can be the tip of your finger. It can be candle flame. It can be a spot on the wall. Setting a timer, you know, a regular kitchen timer for 10 minutes and focusing on the tip of your finger for 10 minutes a day. Or one way that we teach this to children is to use a clock face, like a clock that has a second hand that goes around, not a digital clock. And to focus on that second hand for a child, usually 5 minutes is a long time. And then when that gets easy, to focus on the second hand because it moves pretty quickly, then you practice focusing on the minute hand, which is more challenging because it moves more slowly. And that practice of slowing down to sit and focus on one object for a given period of time, then that is applied in other areas of life. So, for example, if you are listening to somebody and all of a sudden you find that your mind is wandering to what you want to say next, to bring your attention back to just listening until the person has finished talking. You know, there's different ways that then that action can be applied.
That's very similar to what I do teach myself, too. So,
yeah.
Limiting beliefs are a big issue for so many people, especially when they're just getting started building a business.
Yes, that's true.
How can people overcome the limiting beliefs that they have?
Well, that's a good question. I think one important element is to become aware of what the limiting belief is giving to that person, because usually any type of thinking that we have, the reason why we keep it up is that it gives us something. So, for example, someone who thinks, no matter what I do, why should I bother putting out effort because it's not going to work anyway?
Oh, yes. I hear that one all the time.
Yeah. And probably the person was taught that. You know, it might be that they were taught by a well-meaning parent, don't expect too much so you won't be disappointed. It might be that when they were a kid, they grew up in a dysfunctional kind of family, and so there was a lot of powerlessness that they experienced. The thing is that no matter what somebody was raised with, as an adult, they have a lot more tools than they had when they were a kid. So even if they didn't have power when they were a kid, the fact that they can be aware now means that they can have power. So why would they keep thinking the thoughts of victimization? It might be that it gives them a way of having a kind of self-righteousness that makes them feel important. You know, it might seem in a reasoning sense that it doesn't make sense, but in most cases, unproductive beliefs aren't really based on reasoning. They're based more on rationalization. So maybe it's somebody who likes to be right all the time, and so part of being having a victim consciousness, it's a way of them being more important. You know, and again, this seems kind of odd, but there are people who kind of think that it makes them important to have problems. You know, I have more more problems than you do, and so therefore I'm more important. So that's sometimes counseling can help people to become aware of and disentangle themselves from the what one of my teachers calls the nasty benefits of unproductive thinking, meaning that it's not really in terms of wholeness a benefit, but in terms of that person's ego, it's a benefit. It feeds something in their ego. So that's probably one of the first steps. Another step is to associate with people who have more productive ways of thinking, because sometimes what happens is that, and this is particularly true with people who have what we call dysfunctional family patterns. All of the role models they have are people who have these negative ways of thinking. And if someone has a good imagination, they can imagine something different. I mean, people who are pioneers always imagine beyond what they've seen before. But people who don't have a very good imagination, they tend to imitate what they've seen. So, you see it with health. Someone knows that all the men in their family got heart disease at the age of 40, and so they start imagining that, and they get heart disease at the age of 40. Or that they saw their mother and grandmother start getting old at the age of 55, and so, you know, they start imagining that they're going to start feeling old at the age of 55. And to have something different, it's extremely helpful to have a role model of someone who does think positively, somebody who was able to make changes, someone who really lives according to what they want. So that's what I encourage people to do, is to find people to associate with who think the ways that you want to think, who have the kind of life that you want to have. It's one of the benefits of having things like, Optimist Club, business networking groups, you know, any type of group, or to find someone who can be a mentor. That's a very helpful thing, like someone who wants to go into a particular type of business, to find a person who can be a mentor to them. You know, perhaps they can volunteer to be an intern or to an apprentice, where not only can they learn the skills that they want to, but more importantly, they learn how to think like that person does, just by being in their presence.
That's huge.
Yeah,
that is. That's a big deal. And I don't think people often appreciate what it really can do for you to be around people who are in that place where you want to be. And because their perspective, their way of thinking and acting and responding to things can be so much different, and there would be a way that you may never have thought of perceiving something before you met this individual. And it makes a big difference, especially as you're bringing yourself out of any limiting belief that you might have or a pattern that you might have. And a lot of times it's just the, wow, I never thought of it that way, or never looked at it that way or perceived it that way. And that can be a good start.
It can be a huge start. And what I've seen is that usually people who have made it, who are doing things that are productive, they love to help other people. I mean, one of my greatest joys is teaching people the things that I've learned, because I'm very grateful for the people who have taught me the things that I've learned. And one of the, there's a magazine that the School of Metaphysics publishes. It's called Thresholds. And one of my teachers, who has an education in journalism, taught me and some other people how to do interviews. So for a number of years, I was in the position of taking advantage of this magazine that we had to interview prominent people in the world. I even had the opportunity to interview His Holiness the Dalai Lama with a very small group of other reporters. I got to interview Raymond Moody. I got to interview Dr. Bernie Siegel. And all of these people were so generous with their time. I mean, I wasn't paying them for their time. They were just being interviewed for the magazine. And they spoke for hours about their lives, how they came to become the person who they are, what their passion is all about. And what I learned from that is that they were very heart-centered. They were very genuine. You know, people sometimes have the illusion that people who become famous are egotistical, and people who do not go out to become famous, but who just become famous because of being who they are, they're usually not egotistical at all. They're extremely humble. They're very generous about sharing what they know. They really want other people to get it. In fact, Dr. Bernie Siegel, who is probably not as well known as he used to be. This was in the mid-80s. He wrote a number of books, including one called Love, Medicine, and Miracles. I had some of my students with me. We were sitting around a table, and he started asking them questions. It was kind of like a Socratic dialogue that he got going, because he really wanted to teach, and he wanted to aid people. And so the point of that is that if somebody is looking for a mentor, rather than thinking, oh, I can't ask this person, I think most people who are really doing things that are working in the world would absolutely be delighted to have somebody who wants to learn from them.
Mm-hmm. Bernie Siegel's a particular favorite of mine, and actually a number of years ago, I taught a college-level class in Denver on holistic health and wellness. And I used a number of quotes from his book and some of the material and some interviews that I found of him and so forth. And he has one of the favorite quotes in the whole world. When people ask me what my favorite quotes are, one of them is one of his: when you live in your heart, magic happens. Hmm. He's one of those people who has had actually a huge influence on my life. And he, at the time, was doing such groundbreaking work for physicians to help them to look at the whole person, and very, very intriguing and interesting ways that he started to open up the medical profession because of what he discovered.
Yeah. That's interesting. That actually was in Denver where I interviewed him. He was there for some seminar that he was teaching. And what I remember is that he was actually somewhat angry with the medical profession because he kind of fell into discovering that as a surgeon, the best way that he could help people was through listening. It wasn't any of the medical stuff that he had learned. It was through listening to that person, and that the nurses were taught how to do that, but the doctors weren't. He said, you know, doctors don't learn on people. They learn on cadavers. And that was just such an interesting perspective. So I think that there are many people like him who just really want to use what they've learned to help other people, and that's why they would be welcoming of somebody who came to them and said, you know, can I shadow you for a month? Can I communicate with you? Whatever someone is willing to do to learn how to think like someone who has positive beliefs that are working for them.
Tawanda, what do you want to know from today's show?
Well, you told me, Laurel, a very interesting thing, of course, as I mentioned at the top of the show. How I got in direct contact with you was by asking for quotes for an upcoming book. and you shared an interesting story with me and as to how it was that you came up with the title for your book, The Universal Law of Attraction, and I'd love for you to share that story and show our listeners how they too can tap into that kind of intuition or inner knowing to answer questions and solve problems in their life. So will you be willing to do that?
Sure. I wrote a book that was published in 1994 that was on visualization, and the title at that time was called Shaping Your Life, The Power of Creative Imagery. And the book was popular with students at the School of Metaphysics who were assigned it. I got lots of good feedback from people that told them it really helped them. One person who even told me it completely changed her life, but it never sold very well, and it went out of print, so it was just sitting there out of print for years, and then I revised and rewrote half of it. The second half is actually in the process of being revised for a second volume. And I had the book pretty much done, but I didn't have a title that I was satisfied with. And that's something that I've never been too great at, is coming up with catchy titles. So I had lots of different ideas. I had lists of titles on the back of envelopes, in different notebooks. I asked people for ideas. And there were people who gave me different ideas. So I had, I think, three or four that it had boiled down to, and I basically needed to just come up with a title so this book could get published and out. And one evening I was in Dallas, Texas. I was leading a kind of discussion at the School of Metaphysics, and I talked a little bit about the book, and I said, by the way, if anybody has any good ideas for a title, I'm in the market for a title. And then that night, before I went to bed, I decided, you know, I'm going to ask my dream for a book title, because dreams, remembering dreams, writing them down, interpreting dreams, that's a very fundamental part of the School of Metaphysics education. So I've been keeping a dream journal for 30 years now, actually more than 30 years. So before I went to bed, I wrote in my dream journal the date for the next morning, and I thought to myself, I really want to have a dream that's going to give me the title for the book. And then I wrote a statement to that effect in my dream journal. And then when I woke up, the very first thing that was on my mind as soon as I awoke were these words in my mind, the law of attraction and other secrets of visualization. So I wrote that down, and I wasn't even fully awake yet. And when I got fully awake and read it, I thought, well, that sounds kind of boring. I mean, there already were, the movie The Secret was out, people were talking about the law of attraction, and it seemed to my conscious waking brain like that was so maybe too simple. However, I have enough awareness of dreams and the value and the subconscious mind that I decided I was going to trust that, because after all, I had asked my subconscious mind before I went to sleep for a book title, and so here it was giving it to me, so I decided I was not going to reject what my subconscious mind was giving to me. And that's what I decided to call the book. It turned out to be extremely popular. It actually sold out within the first year of printing and went into its second printing, and I went on a lecture tour speaking about the book, which was extremely popular. It drew a lot of new students to our school. So it was a very good example to me of both how the subconscious mind does its duty, which is to fulfill conscious mind's desires, and how tempting it can be to just reject what the subconscious mind is giving, which is part of the reason why people sometimes think visualization doesn't work. It does work, but they have to be willing to listen and respond to what the subconscious mind is giving them.
Yeah, be willing to accept the advice once you've asked for it, basically.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and it showed that you did follow that advice, and, you know, the book sold out of the first printing, went into a second one. So even though the conscious mind might go,
and it's not the most interesting title, or maybe it's too simple or whatever, but when you went ahead and followed that, you did get the result, and who knows what would have happened, of course, but if you had gone, no, I need a different title, and had pushed aside the wisdom of conscience, who knows what else might have happened. So.
Right.
In that being willing to trust in your inner knowing. So let's talk a little bit about ways that our listeners can actually develop some of that inner knowing. And you talked about one thing, is that you have actually kept a dream journal for years and years. And if somebody says, well, I don't know, my dreams are kind of weird. Well, how can having a dream journal benefit me, and how can I make this work to be able to really tap into that inner knowing instead of write down all these weird and bizarre dreams that come up? What would be the way for someone to do that in the most positive and productive way?
Well, the first thing is to get a dream journal put by your bed and even want to remember dreams, because many people don't remember their dreams. Some people think they don't dream, when the truth is we do dream. It's just that a lot of us have been taught dreams aren't important, so why bother remembering them? And if somebody wants to remember dreams, if they put the dream notebook by their bed and date it for the next morning and then tell themselves before they go to sleep, I want to remember my dreams. And you can even write that in the dream notebook. Then upon awakening, what's very important is to write down the first thing that comes to mind, and not to second guess it or to try to wait until later in the day, because if you wait until later in the day, then either you end up forgetting details of the dream, or sometimes you start embellishing it with imagination of things that didn't actually happen. So that's just a practice of getting disciplined to write the dreams down. Then one of the things that we teach people at the School of Metaphysics is that dreams can be interpreted on a lot of different levels. They can be symbolic. In fact, all dreams have a symbolic component to them. They also can be, give the type of intuitive guidance like I received from about the book title. So I encourage people to learn how to interpret the dreams symbolically, and that's one of the things that we teach in our classes that's also available through this online dream study program. And then to pay attention to what happens in their daily life, because there are dreams that, like I know somebody who, a couple who has been married for over 50 years, and he says that when he met his wife, he knew the minute that he met her that he was going to marry her. And it's kind of funny listening to them, because the way they tell the story, she kind of rolls her eyes, and when he first approached her, she wasn't even really interested in him. And, of course, later they got married, and they've been married for 50 years. And,
oh, wow.
He said that before they met, he had a dream that he saw her in the dream, and that was one of the ways that he knew when he met her that she was going to be his wife. And he obviously had paid enough attention to his dream that when he saw her, he recognized her from the dream, which why people can experience deja vu if they have dreamed about something before it's happened. So just paying attention to the dreams, and then paying attention to, in the waking life, if there is something that matches the dream, that's one way to distinguish between a dream that is purely symbolic and one that is what I would call an inner level experience. There are other ways of paying attention to intuition. One thing that we encourage our students to do is to keep a log, an intuitive happenings log, where they just write down intuitive types of experiences that they have. Because what I've found is that people do have intuition. Many people in our culture in particular have been taught that intuition is not real, that it's just your imagination, meaning it's not real. And so it's helpful to keep a journal just to get kind of a reality check about how real it is, how often these things happen. It could be being aware of what someone else is thinking. It could be having a precognitive experience, you know, knowing something before it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It can be something that occurs in dreams. So the more that people keep records of that, the better able they are to trust those experiences when they occur and to respond to them.
So and the again, process of... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Okay.
I just was going to say that, again, that's one of the ways that it's helpful to associate with other people. You know, if you're around a group of people who think that intuition is a bunch of rubbish, it makes it a lot
mm-hmm.
more challenging to pay attention to it than if you're with people who also recognize the value of intuition and will listen and support and encourage that type of endeavor.
Mm-hmm. There's a theme that coming through the things that you're sharing here today on our show, and one is awareness of what's happening around you.
Yes.
Another is paying attention, and the third is trusting the knowledge that comes, whether it be through the dream or through an intuitive knowing or whatever.
Yes, yes. All of those are very important elements. And the awareness is it's essential. And it's something that can be developed with practice. I mean, that's one of the things I appreciate about all of this study is that some people think that you're either intuitive or you're not. You know, I've always been intuitive. I've always been sensitive. And whether somebody has always been aware of their intuition or not, anybody can learn to become intuitive. And so like any skill, you know, whether it's math or spelling or playing the piano, practice makes perfect. The more you practice, the better you get at it.
Absolutely. There are some people that some of them are fairly vocal who would say that the law of attraction and other universal laws are hogwash because they're not provable in the way that gravity works, whether you believe it or not. And the person like that might say that, well, this attraction is just kind of woo-woo stuff, and it doesn't always, because sometimes people attract what they say they want, and sometimes they don't, and gravity always works, and law of attraction doesn't. So what would your response be?
Well, one of the things I've learned in my old age is that I'm not so concerned about trying to convince people of something.
Right.
When I first started studying metaphysics, it was very important to me to try to convince everybody. And what I realized is that I was really trying to convince myself. So the more
mm-hmm.
I practiced with it and the more that I found out that it actually does work all the time and seeing how it always works with other people, that has gotten me to a place of realizing that one of the best ways that I can teach is through my own experience and being an example. What I would say
mm-hmm.
to someone who has a question like that is I would probably ask them to give me an example of a way that it didn't work. And
right.
in most cases, when they talk about the example of how it didn't work in what they're saying, it brings out how it was working. Like, there's a kind of illusion that the law of attraction means you always get what you want, when
right.
the real truth is that you draw to you what matches your thinking. So
thinking.
If you're
yep.
saying, I want to be abundant, but what you are thinking is, but it's never going to happen, and so you're picturing yourself being broke all the time, then that's what you draw to yourself. Or in the example like I was giving with the book, my subconscious mind gave me what I wanted, and I almost pushed it away. So
mm-hmm.
I've seen things like that happen, too, that, for example, somebody who says, I really want the man or woman of my dreams, but they don't answer the phone and they don't go out of the house. I mean, what do they think is going to happen? That they'll sit in the house and visualize all day long, and someone's going to come pounding on the door saying, hello, I'm your soulmate. You
right.
know, it might happen. I know somebody who got married later in life, and it was the person who delivered the mail who he struck up a friendship with. So, yes, he was at home, and she came knocking at the door. But in most cases, it requires both being receptive to what comes to you as well as being willing to go out after what you want. You need to be aggressive and receptive.
Oh, being receptive and making it happen.
A few years back, I had been sick for 10 years in a hospital bed and wheelchair when the doctors gave me 12 to 18 months to live. I had decided I was going to become an RVer so that I could see the country before I died. And 6 months later, we were in Sedona, Arizona, when I went to see a massage therapist just for pain control. And I was not doing really well by that point. And this woman said that I wouldn't die as soon as I thought if I could just remove the negativity from my life. And I'm like, okay, how could that work? So I went and researched what she was telling me. And she had told me that I needed to start using visualizations if this was ever going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that she had told me was, because I had immediately protested and said, well, look, I've been doing visualizations for a long time, but even though in my visualization I can get up and walk out of my wheelchair, it just never seems to happen in real life. And she said, well, you know, it's not going to work because you're starting with the negative. You're starting out picturing yourself in your visualization as being sick and dying and in a wheelchair. You're not going to make any progress doing it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So she had me do some different kinds of visualizations that didn't start with that negative point.
Mm-hmm.
Does that work that way in all visualizations for all circumstances? And if so, how do you modify that beginning point so that you don't start with a negative?
Well, in answer to your question, yes, it does work. And it really has to do with understanding that the mind works in pictures. So you need to have a mental image of what it is that you want. For example, in the book that I wrote on visualization,
right,
there's a chapter on changing habits. And I tell the story about how I quit smoking. I started smoking when I was 16. When I was 32, I mean, there were a number of factors that were a stimulus, one of which was I realized that if I smoked for one more year, I was going to be a smoker for more than half of my life, and that if I was ever going to quit, it would probably be easier to do it at the age of 32, when at least it was half my life I'd been a smoker and half my life a non-smoker. However, I had tried quitting before, and the picture of quitting smoking, it's like those non-smoking signs in restaurants. It's a picture of a cigarette
with
a line through it. So every time
right.
you think of quitting smoking, you think about a cigarette, and then the cravings arise. So part of the real stimulus is that one night, it was late at night, I had finished teaching a class, I wanted to relax and have a cigarette, and I went in my purse, and the pack of cigarettes that I thought still had a couple of cigarettes in it, it was empty. So I rummaged in the bottom of my purse. There was no cigarette there. I looked in the places that, you know, usually there were cigarettes hanging around, didn't have any. So then I started looking for the ashtrays to see if there was a cigarette butt that was long enough to smoke that I could find. I couldn't find one.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I went to the trash can thinking, well, you know, maybe I emptied the ashtrays and there's a cigarette butt that's long enough. And all of a sudden at one point it was as if I looked at myself from the outside and I saw myself rummaging around in these trash cans and I thought, my gosh, you were like a homeless person on the street rummaging through the trash and you are a slave to these cigarettes because why else would I be rummaging around in the trash?
Right.
And that picture of myself being so enslaved by these cigarettes was very strong, and I just asked myself, is this really what I want? Do I want to be a slave, or do I want to be the master of myself and my life? And there were some other factors, too. I mean, I'd been teaching metaphysics for a while. There's a spiritual discipline that we teach people that's a type of fasting that is for the purpose of learning that your mind is more powerful than your body. And one of my students, who was also trying to quit smoking, who was looking to a role model that I was not providing because I was smoking. He told me that I was a hypocrite because I was teaching this stuff and I was smoking, and he was true. I mean, he was accurate, and I had received that. So the point of it is I had several stimuli, but the thing that enabled me to turn the switch on inside of myself is that I finally had a positive picture, that rather than trying to quit smoking, the positive image that I was visualizing was that I wanted mastery of myself and I wanted freedom. And it was that picture of freedom and mastery that I visualized that enabled me to withdraw my attention from the picture of smoking. So in that way, yes, it is always necessary to have a positive image to start from of really what it is that you want rather than what you don't want. However, one thing that I will say about physical diseases or disabilities is that sometimes, well, in all cases, I would say that the body is a teacher and that there is always something to learn from the physical body. So sometimes, in order for the healing to take place, it means looking for the good in the experience. And I know someone, for example, who broke her ankle, and this was after having a couple of car wrecks that she had been in, that after the car wrecks, she became aware that the lesson that she needed to learn is that she needed to slow down. Well, as soon as her car got repaired, she went back to racing around like a chicken with her head cut off until she broke her ankle. And it was the same lesson. So when she finally got the lesson and said, okay, subconscious mind, I guess it was the same thing. She had been saying, I need to slow down. I need to, not run around so much. And that's what those experiences were giving her, was an opportunity to slow down. I know somebody else who gets migraine headaches, and pretty much all the time, the headache comes after a time when she has felt like she's been really busy, and she wants to rest and relax. And for whatever reason, she doesn't allow herself to rest and relax, and so then she gets a headache, and so she has to lie down. The problem of that being that she can't enjoy the rest and relaxation when she's down with headache.
She's in pain, yeah.
Right. And I know someone else who used to get migraine headaches, and what I noticed from being around her is that every time the headache came after her truly racking her brain about something that she was worried about, or she couldn't really come to a solution that she was satisfied with, and she would say in a kind of frantic way, I just can't think anymore. I just can't think about this anymore. And so then she would get a headache, and she literally could not think when she got the headache. So although she didn't really want the headache was giving her what she said she wanted, which was to not think, where what she finally learned is that by doing these concentration exercises and allowing herself the freedom to not think, like spending a period of time each day to just have a still mind and not think, that, and not to do it by zoning out in front of the TV, to do it by clearing her mind with a concentration exercise, then she didn't need the headaches anymore. But sometimes what people find is that a physical, what we might call a disability, actually gives them something. I know someone else who was born deaf, and when she was about 20, she went through a surgery that restored her hearing, not 100%, but pretty close. I think she got 80% hearing. And it drove her crazy to be able to hear, because she had a very hard time focusing her attention. One of the stories she told me is the first time she took a shower after she had the surgery done, she freaked out because she thought she was hearing gunfire, and it was actually the sound of the water in the shower that she had never heard before, and it was so loud compared to what she was used to that she almost went into a panic. And so it actually threw her into kind of a tailspin, because what she realized is that part of why she had chosen to be born deaf is that it gave her an opportunity to experience a kind of silence that she had not learned how to produce within herself. And so going through the surgery, I mean, she needed to adjust to it, that it actually had complicated the learning that she set herself up for this lifetime. So that's, when you're asking earlier about metaphysics, that's part of what metaphysics provides also, is learning to look at life from the perspective of the soul, which is not usually the same as the perspective of the conscious mind. You know, someone might say that poor child, she was born deaf, when actually from a soul's perspective, she had chosen it for a purpose, and by changing that condition physically, because man is the creator, she had actually given herself kind of an added burden that she had to adjust to. And I'm not at all saying surgery is bad. I'm just saying that that was part of what she learned about it after the fact, about a soul choice that she had made.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rhonda, we only have about 15 minutes left, so what else would you like to find out today?
Well, one thing I'm just kind of curious, if the School of Metaphysics, or if you have thought about providing some classes that are done, you know, like you have those live classes where there are actual the branches of the school. Have you thought of actually doing some where they were live through teleseminar or through webinar or something of that nature?
We have thought about it. Actually, one of the ways that we are experimenting with that is with the Dream Scholar program. We have once a month something that's called Real Time with a Teacher, where people can communicate with an online discussion board. We may do some live chats. So we are experimenting with that with the Dream Study program. In terms of the regular metaphysics program, part of the nature of the study is the hands-on practical application. So that's one of the reasons why we teach the classes where we have a school center that people can come to so that they can have in-person teaching with a teacher. So we do have other classes that we teach, short courses and things like that, at the correspondence study that people can receive. There's some of the education that we provide that does need to be in person, you know, hands-on with a teacher and with a group of people.
Mm-hmm. I just thought it would be interesting to explore, as it seems it might work well for there to be a live, as opposed to just simply self-paced home study, but something that's live using some of the power of technology available to connect people in a live environment. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, we are looking into some of those things. Our staff people are all volunteer, including myself.
Right.
So a lot of how we move into new areas has to do with the skills and talents of the people who we have. And so I think that it's likely that we'll be moving into that within the next, you know, probably year or two. The Dream Scholar program is the way right now that we're beginning to move into some of those areas.
Well, if you'd like to experiment with it a bit, speak to me off air.
Okay. That would be great.
You have something very intriguing on your site I'd love for you to speak about, is the power of 10.
Yes. There is a seminar that Dr. Barbara Condren, who is a teacher who's been with the school for many years, she has had her mind and hands and heart involved with almost everything that the school produces. She developed a seminar called Powers of 10 that is a pretty multi-dimensional experience. It's some lecture, it's a lot of hands-on interactive application so that people get ideas presented and then ways immediately to put that into practice. And one of the important elements of the day is that it teaches people step by step how to resolve conflict and to come to a place of zero point. In other words, to move beyond the polarity of looking at something as good or bad and being able to really understand it from a neutral perspective, which is huge. I mean, we've had people come, like police officers that work with traumatic experiences themselves, or police chaplains who work with people who have been traumatized. Many people have used it to resolve childhood issues or relationship issues because, and this is part of what I was referring to about looking at life from the perspective of the subconscious mind. As far as
right.
the subconscious mind is concerned, things are not good or bad. They're just learning. From the conscious mind perspective, is how we look at it is good, bad, positive, negative, all of those things.
Yeah, we put the judgment on it.
Right, right. And to not just intellectually, but really experientially, to find the good in experience, to really see it just as it is, it can really aid people to be able to move beyond holding on to resentment, negativity, all of those kinds of things, and to be able to forgive, to move forward. So that's some of what the day provides. It also teaches people in a nutshell all of the essential life skills that I was mentioning earlier. So kind of like if you go to one of those smorgasbords where you can get a taste of a little bit of everything, it's kind of like tasting the entire School of Metaphysics program that's very comprehensive in a day. You know, you get the taster's menu of the day.
A little sampler platter, the poo-poo platter of metaphysics.
Right, exactly.
A little of this, a little of everything, yeah. Love it. And what is next for you with your book? And you, I know you're doing a lot of speaking and moving around. What is next for you in your work with Law of Attraction?
Well, as I said earlier, the original book that I wrote on visualization, I divided in half. And so the Law of Attraction book was one part of it. The second volume is probably going to be called The Law of Abundance. It focuses more on the spiritual purpose for even having a creative mind. So it's not so much about manifesting what you want as it is how to create for the goodness of all concerned, people who have very humanitarian ideals, how to fulfill those, what it is to even be responsible for the spiritual powers we have. One thing that I've become very aware of is as we, meaning humanity, have developed more and more skills, we can create pretty much anything. I mean, we can clone babies in a test tube. We can split atoms and blow up the world. We can do anything. And because of that, there is a need to have a developed conscience and consciousness to be purposeful about what we create. I mean, that's one of the messages that Linus Pauling brought to the world. He was a scientist and was one of the people responsible for developing nuclear power and became aware with some other scientists that by developing that, they had also put into the hands of mankind the ability to blow up the world. And that the scientists had a responsibility to not use the nuclear power for bombs. And I mean, I look at the medical community and in kind of the same way, is that we have the ability to do pretty much anything medically. And I'm not saying in all cases that there's anything wrong with drugs or surgery. However, I think they're way overused. And because of that, people end up having problems. You know, I was married to a man who ended up getting kind of entrapped in the medical system with juvenile diabetes and one medication after another, one surgery after another. There were a lot of pretty important questions that both he and I faced about, you know, what is in... how much of this is in our hands to make choices about and how much of it is a matter of surrendering to God's will. So in terms of asking those kinds of questions in any creative endeavor, you know, is this something that I should be visualizing to bring about, or is this something that I should be surrendering to understand? You know, not that it's either or, but to even ask those kinds of questions, that's what this other book is about. And then I actually have two other books in my head that I'm hoping to be able to write all three of these within the next year. One of them is about intuitive dreaming. So if there are any listeners who've had dreams, visitation dreams, dreaming of people who have died, or recognitive dreams, dreaming about things that have come true, or mutual dreams, having the same dream as someone else, any of those types of dreams, I would welcome them sending me the dreams and the stories about them if they would like to be included in the book.
Excellent. So you're going to be definitely kept busy. So the Law of Abundance, though, is the next one for you. Excellent.
And how would they send you their dreams and their stories?
They can email it to me. The email address is lclark@som.org. S as in School of Metaphysics. So it's lclark@som.org.
Okay.
Anyone who's
interested. And I will send to. I'm sorry.
Well, I just was going to say that anyone who's interested in learning more about the School of Metaphysics, the email of the school is som@som.org, or they can just go to our website, which is som.org.
Yes, and I have a blog post up already that would be attached to today's show that has the Peace Covenant, of course, properly linked back to the original, and I will put one up with what you've mentioned about your upcoming book, requesting the dreams and other things from today's show into a post so that it will be easy for people to find the various links and addresses and so forth all in one place.
That would be great. And if anybody is a speaker of another language, if they would like to translate that Peace Covenant, our goal is to have it translated into every language so that everyone in the whole world can read it. So we'd love.
Well, do you have a blog?
I don't. I don't have a blog.
You really need one?
You need one. Mm-hmm.
I would put WordPress right on the front page of SOM.org.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do that, then put it on /blog. And when you install WordPress, use a plugin called the Global Translator plugin. If you look at my old site, www.theimuniversity.com, you'll see the Global Translator on there. It translates your entire blog into more than 72 different languages.
Wow.
Right.
And what it does from a search engine perspective is just huge.
Hmm. And tell me again the name of your website that you were saying?
www.theimuniversity.com.
Okay.
Up at the top, you'll see a bunch of flags going across the top, and that's the Global Translator plugin.
Okay.
It works a little differently than most translators in that it actually goes through every piece of content on your blog, indexes it, translates it, and then it stores duplicate copies in those other languages. So that way you can get the benefit from a search engine from that as opposed to say, behind locked doors or something like that. It would work really well for you because all 72 different languages would be indexed in the search engine.
Hmm.
I get more traffic from outside the U.S. I get about 60 to 70% of my traffic from outside the U.S. because of that plugin.
Wow. That's great to know.
Yeah. And I just sent all that in our sites to you real quick just so you can see the info and easily. So.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And if
a
we can
huge,
ever help with that, just let us know, because that's what I teach.
Right.
Okay, that's great.
We only have a couple more minutes left. Who should be using all of the concepts that we talked about today?
I would say everybody. I mean, the way I look at it is that everybody has a mind, everybody has creative potential, everybody has so much wealth within them in terms of talents, understandings, abilities, that if everybody really learns how to listen to the inner self and how to bring out what's best in themselves, not only is their life more fulfilling, but it makes life better for everybody. So if everyone is doing that, then the whole world improves.
Well, that was a really well said way of putting it. What can you use these concepts to achieve in your life? If it can be used by anyone, what kinds of things can you achieve?
Well, it can be used to achieve better health, better relationships, financial prosperity, I think ultimately what is the most important is that it aids people to have a deeper relationship with the source or their creator, however they look at that, and therefore to be much more fulfilled and purposeful in how they live their lives. I mean, I've been doing this for 30 years, and I can't say that I'm perfect. What I can say is that when I go to bed at night, most of the time I have a deep sense of fulfillment that I've really done something meaningful during the day. And that's what I want for everybody, is that they have a sense of meaning and purpose in their lives.
Absolutely.
Excellent, well, yeah, definitely.
Thank you so much for being here. It's really been our pleasure having you.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. It was a great show.
For everyone who's interested in connecting with Lauren and learning more about metaphysics and the law of attraction and all of the other topics we talked about today, again, you can visit www.slikesamomlikemary.org. Rhonda, what do we have coming up next week for our listeners?
We have an expert in journaling who has taken her material and created a train-the-trainer model with it. So I'm really excited about it.
Oh, interesting. That's going to be a fun call as well.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's Tuesday at noon Eastern. From the conference I was at last week, I can't even begin to count how many different connections I made. And we have some really amazing guests already set up. I think we're booked for all of December and part of January with these, Rhonda. I'm sending you over a list, and you're just going to have to get them their dates and tell them when, because they're all excited about being on the show.
Perfect. I look forward to that. And, Laurel, thank you so much. It really has been awesome, and I look forward to just being able to spread the word about our show, and I will make sure everybody gets the information about all the ways to contact you and assist with your upcoming book as well.
Well, thanks, Rhonda, and thanks so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for being here, Laurel.
Thank you.
If we can ever do anything, just let us know.
Well, thank you very much.
Take care, everybody, and have a great week.